Hello, I'm Rob Shearman, and you're listening to The Happiness Patrol.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to The Happiness Patrol, episode number 139. We are talking today about Dark Water. It's the first part of the season finale of Season 8 with the spectacular Mr. Peter Capaldi. Yeah, we got a lot of reveals, and we got all kinds of little surprises that popped up, but enough about that. We'll talk about that in a second. You know why, Michelle?
Would that be because the Happiness Patrol starts now?
That's because the Happiness Patrol starts now.
Yay!
So we're back. Chaz is still at Hurricane Who, doing some interviews as we record this today. Hopefully he will be joining us a little bit later in the podcast, but we do have Michelle. Michelle.
Hey.
And we've got Nancy. Nancy.
Hey.
So you guys have a happy Halloween?
Yes.
Yeah.
I didn't do much. We had exactly one trick-or-treater.
Are you kidding me?
Mm-mm. We got a whole bag of candy.
Uh-huh.
And one trick-or-treater.
So you're eating a lot of, oh, well, I guess
well,
your son
no, the boys are, the boys.
Eating a lot of candy. Yeah. So, yeah, I try very hard to balance out how much candy I get compared to, like, how many people came last year. But I got one bag of candy also. I was, like, out of all of that candy because there was a ton of little trick-or-treaters in my neighborhood this year. And thank God I didn't have to eat a lot of candy. So But
we never get very many because there's one street light on our block. Oh. So I think people look down the street and they go, we aren't going down there.
There's haunted witches down yonder.
Yeah, we'll get like just the neighborhood kids. It was actually funny because one year my daughter went trick-or-treating at a house across the street that these guys had just moved into, and they just handed her an entire bag of candy. Because they're like, okay, you're the first kid here. Take it. We're going to bed.
Funny. Funny. Well, how about you, Michelle? How was your trick-or-treating time? Did you get lots of candy or did you get lots of rocks?
Well, I live in an apartment on the third floor of an apartment building in an apartment complex. It's kind of tucked behind. Not a lot of people. If I get trick-or-treaters, it's just kids that live in this complex.
Oh, okay.
So I was put down a small. I put out a bowl that has a couple of the. Instead of buying candy, I buy those bags of little goldfish cracker packets, or something like that.
Oh, you're that lady.
Goldfish are delicious.
Yeah, kids love them. You don't know how many goldfish cracker crumbs I've had to vacuum out of the back of my car.
Yeah, okay. And also like it cuts the candy, so kids do like them. I have in the past received some goldfish crackers. So I know that I'm not like handing out the modern equivalent of an apple.
Yeah,
and it was fun, and there were many Doctor Who related costumes that I saw, with like both little kids and adults. But I think the king of Halloween Town this year has to be Sean Pertwee, who dressed as his father.
Yes,
for Halloween, which was pretty great. And if you haven't seen it yet. I believe, Nancy, you posted a picture of that on our Facebook page.
Yes, indeed, right? I did.
So if you follow us on Facebook, then find that post and reply to it with a picture of your own Halloween costume, especially if it's Doctor Who related, but that's not required because we want to see how creative and awesome you guys are.
Well, speaking of some cool costumes, Chaz and I were at Hurricane Who yesterday.
Yes.
Chaz was interviewing some people on the stage and being generally Chazzy, which is great. And it was wonderful because we saw a lot of really cool costumes yesterday. The coolest, I think, if you guys haven't seen this yet, and I need to post this one, there was a guy who a little kid who was a TARDIS transformer. Okay.
Oh.
And it was really well made. In fact, I heard from our friend Teresa that he won Best of Show at the little costume contest.
Cool.
So that was really cool.
Nice.
And his brother was a Minecraft tenant doctor.
I did see. Nice. I saw that on Teresa's
so that was pretty cool too. So yeah, there were a lot of really cool little costumes, a lot of good time, very nice time was had by everybody. Mm-hmm. at Hurricane Who. It was good. Peter Davison was there this year, and yes. I got to have my photo taken with Peter Davison, so that was a lot of fun.
Cool.
And look for that on Facebook soon. And what was the other thing? Oh, yes, we have a great interview. I was able to score an interview with the fabulous and very funny Mr. Rob Sherman. That is going to be a little bit later on this particular podcast, so stay tuned.
Woo-hoo. Seriously, I cannot take it anymore with the spoilers from BBC and BBC America. I have to unfollow them. I can't take it anymore. I don't know what, like, room full of monkeys banging on typewriters they got in there, hoping they'll put out Hamlet.
So what exactly are you talking about by spoilers?
Things like how the BBC America Twitter account will live tweet the episode as it airs for the first time. You know, and meanwhile, those of us who don't have BBC America but have given money to BBC America to download the episode on iTunes
Uh-oh.
Or Amazon or wherever we get it, we don't get it until the next morning.
Oh.
And the biggest offenders as far as spoilers go is not other fans. It's the official
actual BBC,
like,
America, huh?
The actual, like, BBC and BBC America social media accounts. Like, you cannot trust those guys not to ruin things for you.
You can never know when, like, one of your friends on Facebook or Twitter is going to retweet one of those things or repost.
Right. Just because it's released by the official social media of Doctor Who or, you know, Walking Dead or whatever, doesn't mean that they didn't make a bad decision.
Let's move right along, shall we? Dark Water.
Man, yes.
This one was a build-up. It's been building up for the entire season. We have gotten the conclusion here to the amazing mystery of who the hell is Missy.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got that reveal. And we're going to tell you who Missy is in just a second here.
Yeah. But spoiler alert.
Yeah. Spoiler alert.
Go watch the episode.
Yeah. Red letters. Spoiler alert.
Go watch the episode and then come back. So we'll give you a little time to do that. So, okay, we'll wait. Okay, good. I'm glad you watched the episode. So.
We hope you enjoyed it.
We hope you enjoyed it. Now, it was interesting, too, the build-up for the reveal of Missy. That was mm-hmm. the big one. Everybody had, and we all had our little fan theories, which were wrong. I really think that most of the fan theories were a lot more interesting than what we got.
I agree.
Yeah. Now, the other, before we go on to that, I also want to say that we saw the return of some monsters, some bad guys who have been mm-hmm. with Doctor Who for a very long time. And I'm not exactly sure if I was comfortable with that or not. Once again, spoiler alert.
I actually remained fairly spoiler free. I believe at some point I saw pictures of Cybermen. So I think at the back of my mind, I knew that there were going to be Cybermen. Uh-huh. But I, you know, like as soon, you know, I actually look on Saturday, what time is the episode airing in Britain? Uh-huh. And I log off of Facebook and Twitter.
Yeah, you gotta. So we got Cybermen as the bad boys. Mm-hmm. And I cannot believe, now we're going to talk a little bit about this, the reveal of Missy. I cannot believe that Missy was revealed as the master. Had any of you guys heard that particular fan theory at all?
Yes, I have.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
You know, we've had, you know, the Chekhov's gun going way back to the Matt Smith era when in, what was it, The Doctor's Wife, when they say that Time Lords can regenerate into a different gender. Yeah. So that's been on the table for a good year or two.
Uh-huh.
That it was something tickling the back of my brain that Missy could be. And to a certain extent, I think Missy is a good match for Peter Capaldi because she's Scottish. And I've said all along, I absolutely adore Michelle Gomez. I'm actually amazingly okay with her being master because I think she can play it really well.
Yes,
she's no Roger Delgado, but...
But who the fuck is?
I don't know. But... I'm totally okay with her being the master.
Okay, Michelle. So what do you think?
Okay. So my thoughts on this are complex. My favorite theory that was wrong was that she was the Black Guardian, and I never thought for a minute that was actually going to be the case. I think I've seen a lot of people say, "Oh, maybe Missy is the master." But the thing is that whenever a mysterious person shows up, there are certain people, like, everybody's like, "Oh, it's the Valyard. Oh, it's the master." Like, it was kind of too obvious. So when she revealed herself as the master, I wasn't expecting her to say that she was the master, but neither was I surprised. When Sir Derek Jacobi revealed that he was the master, that was freaking huge. I was like, oh shit, Catfile's the master.
It was beautiful. It was a beautiful moment.
And that moment when she said that should also have been a beautiful moment, and it was well executed and it was well acted, and I just didn't respond to it very strongly. I'm disappointed in myself more than anything. Why didn't I feel stronger about that?
I watched the episode again this morning just before we recorded, and I totally missed this the first time, but when she first greets the doctor, and she does that little, you know, thing that she's a robot. And when she kisses him, listen to the music. You hear the sound of drums.
Sound of the drums, yeah.
Yeah, it was like, whoa. And then when she puts his hand on her hearts and he's just completely baffled, you realize then it's like, oh, I know why you're dumbfounded.
For me, I was like, you know, I was like, oh, here's Missy. And, you know, here she's acting all cuckoo and woohoo, you know, just really out there, which is, you know, the actress is great. This is my first time seeing her in anything. So then, you know, he says, oh, you know, you know who I am. You know who I am. And he doesn't. And when she reveals that the Nether Sphere is Time Lord technology, and, you know, and she's a Time Lord, a Time Lady, and we're like, you know, everybody, and I know they're either going the Ronnie or Romana. And let me tell you, I would have been just tickled fucking pink
if it had been the Ronnie.
Absolutely.
But
I'm thinking also that, because, you know, we haven't seen the Ronnie in a long time. The Master is almost like the Daleks to me and the Cybermen, because they seem to have been a little overused to me. Now, but because she did reveal herself as the Master, I was like, oh. I mean, I was just like, oh. the master. And, you know, and twofold, because, like, number one, you know, the master has always left a bad taste in my mouth after everybody on earth became the master, you know? Yeah, so I felt, I was like, oh, I'm feeling like Michelle at the end of Love and Monsters. So,
Well, I don't think, I don't want to deny your experience, Lewis, but I don't think you realize the horrible revulsion that I felt. I don't think you
realize
revulsion.
The horrible revulsion I felt last night.
Okay.
Because I was just like,
I don't
going,
think that Michelle Gomez is the master. I don't think that the fact that it's the master and not something a little more
creative,
something that we haven't seen. No, something. Well, you know what I'm not gonna say it wasn't creative. I think Michelle Gomez is awesome as the master, and I think it's going to be great. And I think that she deserves for us to be excited about it. It's kind of like how I feel about, you know, Ewan McGregor did an amazing job as a young Obi-Wan Kenobi, and he's saddled with these movies, and it's a disservice to him because he really did a great job throughout all three of those movies, regardless of everything else that happened with them. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is definitely going to be better than that.
I'm going to be sitting on the side of defending Michelle Gomez.
Oh, you know, yeah, she's
okay. Like I said, I adore Michelle Gomez. Please, people, go out and watch Green Wing. Go look for it. It's amazing. She plays basically a psychotic character. She plays a character in that is very much like the master in his last incarnation. So that completely makes sense to me, you know, that she's the one. But it also makes sense because she's Scottish. And I do like my master to be balanced with my doctor.
Yeah.
And since we're having an overtly Scottish doctor, I think it is kind of cool that we have a Scottish master. Mm-hmm. You know, as much as I, you know, when I heard the rumor that Charles Dance was going to be the master, and I thought, oh, that would be awesome. I'm really actually okay with Michelle Gomez doing it because I know she can play that, like, slightly, well, maybe a little more than slightly insane, evil kind of character with relish. Gobs of relish, and I love that.
I have not been happy with this character of Missy, and now it's just been like, oh my god, she's the master? I mean, come on, people, you could have come up with something a little bit more creative than that. Now, let me say, that's not a reflection of this actress's portrayal of crazy. Like what you said before many times on this podcast, that you know, a mark of a good actor is to make you love him or hate him in that role. You know, if he's playing a bad guy and you really just despise him, he's doing his job, or she's doing his job. So so that's one of the reasons there. I'm sure she's going to be fine as this character. I'm not really, you know, I'm going to have to see where this whole writing is going to go, where the story is going to go. Hopefully it'll be all right. The big thing now is I think the biggest point we're trying to make here is it is now completely canon that Time Lords can regenerate into another sex. I mean, yeah. It's been mentioned before, like you said, in The Doctor's Wife, but now we've seen it. Boom. It's true. Mm-hmm. It's there. So,
but we knew,
goes
you know,
now.
You knew Moffat was going to take that because, you know, he's already rewriting a lot of Time Lord lore.
Uh-huh.
So what the hell? What's another one? I guess maybe I've become numb.
I don't know about rewriting Canyon. There was never stated that they couldn't.
No, it wasn't. But he's added an awful lot to, you know, to the volume of Time Lord canon.
He certainly
well,
has.
He wanted to make
he's
his mark.
He's a fanboy, yeah.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah, really.
He had to piss on that fire hydrant a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Right at the beginning, my favorite bit of this entire episode was from the beginning until when the doctor says, hey, let's go save Danny.
Right.
You know, that to me.
I like the let's go to hell. Or yeah. you go to hell.
Go to hell. Yeah. Yeah. So we see Clara here just completely shaken to the core of her being, of everything she believes in, because she said she's never been in love before, and she's never, you know, going to tell anybody else that she loves them, you know, like, you know, she says, what was it? She said that these words are yours, you know, which was quite, you know, pretty profound. And then, mm-hmm. you know, the wait on the end of the line, I was like, what the hell's the deal? Is he like taken aback this much by it or what?
No,
what
you could see it was, when it was she really... said that and he stepped off the curb. You could tell he was in the middle of a road when he stopped.
Yes, you could. You totally could.
And I went, no!
Yep. Well, I was taken along for the ride just like Clara was. So it hit me just as much as it hit Clara. So or hit Danny. Woo!
Ooh. Too soon.
Too soon? Okay. But anywho, when she marches into that TARDIS, man, I was like, she's up to something. And to me, that was really cool because I could totally see her evolving into this Missy character, you know, some timey wimey.
That was your fan theory that was wrong.
Well, no, not at all. But until that point, I was like, you know, is this what's going to happen? Is this what's going to happen to Clara? She's going to be like, so like, you know, disturbed by this death that, you know, and that the doctor can't go back and fix it, that she's going to become a mortal enemy of the doctor, that kind of thing. Because
that would have been pretty cool.
That would have been so much more cooler. But, you know, and maybe that might have been one of the things that sort of like took me by surprise too. So Chaz, are you back with us?
I'm back. Yay! I'm here.
Yay!
I'm alive. I literally 5 minutes ago was talking to Terry Malloy Davros from the Big Finish and from the TV series, and now I'm here. It's
Yay!
So great.
Yay! That is very cool. We
live from Hurricane Who.
Live from Hurricane Who. It's Chaz M. So yeah, I was just telling everybody about what a great time we had yesterday.
Yeah, it's been a lovely, very low key con compared to some of the big Doctor Who conventions. But that's kind of what I like about it. It's a vacation and a convention.
Ah, nice. And I forgot to tell everybody that we had some fans of the show actually come over, and we got to hang out with them. Her name was Sam, and her husband Mark. And
boy,
that was so nice from all the way from the Manchester area.
Wow.
They came out. We did some karaoke on Ooh. Wednesday night. And then we got to hang out a bit at Hurricane Who yesterday. And that was a lot of fun. Lots of fun.
Yeah, it was swell.
Delightful people. I'm so glad we had a chance to meet them and hang out. So that's very, very cool. So
and they had the bonus fun of having we've had a cold snap, what Floridians would call a cold snap.
Yes.
Hit what the area.
What we would call a heat wave.
Yeah. And what Mancunians would call Tuesday. So it's been nice and chilly here as well, which is which I love. You can tell who the natives are because they're the ones with their arms under their, you know, they're tucked up and look like they're shivering all the time.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So Chaz, so who all have you talked to this convention?
Oh, let's see. Dominic Glenn, who was a composer for the show in the 80s, Terry Malloy, and Andrew Cartmell, the script editor for the McCoy years, who he and I have a lot in common. So we have a lot of chatting to do. But yeah, Dominic Glenn is a super cool guy, and I'm envious. You LI Whoers, you're going to get you're really in for a treat. The ones of you who can make the Time Flight concert on Thursday, I will unfortunately miss it, but you'll be able to see Dominic Glenn play live. This will be mega awesome.
That will be very cool.
On the subject of LI Who, as of November 1st, they are completely sold out.
How Yay! Cool is that? That's very cool. Yeah.
Congratulations to our friends at LI Who.
Nancy.
Yes.
Go ahead and give us your opinions on this entire episode.
I pretty much liked it. You know, I had a few little quibbles, but you know, I think if you
edit, what have you done with the real Nancy?
No, I love Michelle Gomez, and I wasn't really expecting her to be the master, but I think she played it very well. I think the reveal was perfect. You know, that the doctor had a hint right there at the beginning, you know, because when she kisses him, you hear the drums and he feels her heart beat. And, you know, she is acting like a slightly insane master, which is nice. I mean, she's no Roger Delgado, but
slightly.
You know, yeah, slightly, not totally whacked out, but you know, I think it's a nice. It makes sense for the character of the master, so I like that. And the whole business with Danny getting killed, I was not expecting that.
No, wasn't.
And that totally came out of left field for me. And I'm interested to see how they're going to resolve it, because really there's only a couple of ways they can do it. Okay, we have, you know, the nether sphere. He's clearly up there. You can't resurrect his body. I have a strong suspicion Clara is going to end up in the nether sphere with him, a la the... Yeah, you know, the whole gang at the end of Silence in the Library. I think we're kind of having that Moffat idea.
You think she's going to sacrifice herself to be with him?
Yeah.
Even though that's not really him?
Yeah. I don't know how that's going to end up, but, you know, that's probably the only way this can resolve itself and she'll be happy. Otherwise, she's going to be miserable because she won't have Danny.
Right.
You know, I really can't see any other way out. But of course, we could always get the big reset button.
Yeah,
there's always a possibility of the big reset button. But the other little things I like, it just happened that yesterday I was getting ready to watch The Invasion, and when I saw the Cybermen going down the steps, and I'm like, yes! And I literally, after that episode, we went back and watched The Invasion, so it was kind of nice.
Very nice.
Yeah.
So, there were lots of little things I liked. My quibbles are generally pretty minor. Like, I didn't think Cybermen could sit down, and they're all in chairs when they're in their dark water.
Yeah,
that was a little funny. Oh, I did love the "We have Steve Jobs." So they had ideas.
Yeah,
that was
kind
of
funny.
That was a great.
I thought about you, Chaz.
Thank you.
but you know what?
How many people have said that to me today?
Yeah, but I you know, like the 3W logo looking like a Cyberman eye. I totally didn't clue into that until.
No.
Just before the reveal. I was remaining pretty spoiler-free before I saw this, so there wasn't a whole lot that was old to me. So, yeah, and actually, I do got to say, not being spoiled probably made this a much more enjoyable episode.
That's cool. That's very
If I had known more, I probably wouldn't have enjoyed it as much. Oh, yeah, and the other thing I liked is Danny hovering over the delete button. It's like, So, overall, I did like it. Actually, you know, there were some little bits of direction that I like that I kind of like to bring up. There's a point when Missy looks up at the sphere, and then it cuts immediately to the logo, the Cyberman eye on the door, and Danny. So she's looking up there, and then we're going into the nether sphere. I thought that was a very nice little, that's what's going on. If you pay attention to the direction, there's some nice little bits in there.
Cool.
Well, also, you got to remember, Moffat has said more than once that when he does a two-parter, he wants part two to be completely different.
Yeah.
He did that with Silence in the Library, Forest of the Dead. So it'll be really interesting to see what he does in the second
half. Yeah, speaking of Silence of the Library, I was thinking this is kind of interesting, too, because the nether sphere actually seems like the library on the moon.
Straight.
Yeah.
Seems like the master's version of.
And there's even a doctor involved.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Dr. Chang.
There was the Dr. Moon, and there's Dr. Chang.
Oh, that's right. So I think, Nancy, you were right about your Moffat reusing his seven good ideas.
Yeah. I've got to actually enumerate them, but yeah, it's less than 10.
Yeah.
It's single digits.
So, Michelle.
Yes.
Why don't you tell me what you thought about this episode, hon?
Overall, I enjoyed it. I liked it. I was left wondering, what was it that Clara was trying to figure out with the post-it notes before she realized that she really, really needed to talk to Danny and tell him
very good.
That she loved him. Well, she was trying to figure something out, probably having to do with who the lady in the shop was, which is she didn't recognize Missy. So, although the master does have a history of disguises, so it could have been Missy that gave her the number. She's on the phone with Danny, and she makes very clear to him what she's saying to him. You can see that he steps off the curb and that he's in the middle of the street when he stops. And I went, no! know. So when there was no answer on the other end of the phone, I knew what had happened. And that was kind of sad. Super interesting and really great, like, her interaction with the doctor and how she reacted to Danny's death was really great and really interesting, and some really fantastic character building. And the whole moment with go to hell, and she's like, fair enough. He's like, no, that's what we're gonna do. What are you doing? I liked that. I'm excited, and I'm looking forward to seeing how this is going to develop. I don't know if the Cybermen that we're seeing are actual Cybermen, or if they just have an outer shell of, like, she just borrowed some, you know, engineering and manufacturing processes for whatever it is her plan is, or if she's really working with Cybermen or not. Another couple of questions that I had were, what were the three words? It was 3W, and oh, three words, don't cremate me. Never mind, I figured it out right now.
See, that's what the happiness
pearl. Hooray!
It helps you
that's
figure
what
out
we do.
How you feel about Doctor Who, so there you go.
Exactly. And I remember when I saw the logo for 3W, I was trying really hard to figure out what it was representing, because I remembered way back during the Tenant era, and I'm blanking on the name of the episode, but it was the episode that had Mark Gatiss in it as the bad guy, and it was the gene, the Fountain of Youth technology.
Lazarus.
Yes. The company, Mark Gatiss's character's company, had a logo that was a series of circles, and the series of circles was the outline of the design on the Master's signet ring. And so it was during that whole, like, Vote Saxon arc.
All right.
And that logo was supposed to be, like, a subtle clue, but it was just a little bit too subtle. And so when I saw the large circle and the small circle, I was like, that it reminded me of that, ironically. And so I was trying to figure out what it was an outline was, and then the doors closed, and I went, oh, okay.
Yeah, once the doors closed, that's when I figured it out, too. Yeah. I was like, oh.
Yeah.
I managed to get it just moments earlier than that, when they were walking through, and once they established that these things were tombs, and then they pulled back to a big shot of enormous numbers of them, and I went, here we go.
Hey everybody, this is Lewis B. of the Happiness Patrol, and we are having the great pleasure talking to Mr. Rob Sherman here at Hurricane Who. Rob, welcome to the Happiness Patrol.
Oh, thank you very much. It's good to be here.
So how's everything been so far?
It's fun, yeah. I'm in Orlando, Florida, you know, which is better than London, England for, you know, unless maybe you like history and things and maybe Big Ben. I mean, but generally speaking, the weather's better.
Right.
There are slightly more theme parks involving Disney characters here than we have in London, which is good because I quite like theme parks involving Disney characters. There are things like, you know, at this convention they have things like swimming pool parties, which you can't do in England legally because basically there's only one day a year we're allowed in swimming pools.
Only one
because
day.
Otherwise it's seen as a form of suicide.
Yeah.
So on August the 14th every year, this is honestly true.
Are you?
Yeah, this is honestly true. It's called Swimming Pool Day, and everybody in Britain is actually required by law to go into a swimming pool for at least half an hour, because otherwise we don't wash, because in Britain we try to avoid water, because the problem with water on our skins is that it freezes, it's so cold in England. So actually being here, I mean, I've had non-stop showers since I arrived. It's amazing. I didn't know what water on the skin even felt like anymore. It's great here. I'm having a good time.
I'm glad.
Yeah.
Now you're going to throw me off. So we were talking a little bit earlier.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. The Doctor Who fans know you mainly for the incredible episode that you wrote, which you adapted, I guess, from an earlier story.
From a Big Finish audio. Thank you. Yeah, yeah.
Of Dalek.
Dalek, yeah.
You wrote Dalek. Now, to me, personally, just on a personal note, that episode made me more sympathetic to what Daleks are.
Right.
And also it just brought out so much of the Doctor's character and the backstory of the Time War.
Yeah, thanks.
And a lot of people didn't know, and it set, like, you know, fans like me, old-time fans, of course, you know, just going, oh, whoa, there's something more back here, and yeah, we want to know more.
Well, the thing about, the way I see horror, actually, is that, I mean, Daleks, I find more frightening if they are more sympathetic. I know that sounds a bit silly, but I find anything actually which has greater complexity is more menacing. I mean, a Dalek is obviously this, you know, this pretty much irredeemable bad guy.
Right.
But I feel that actually sort of, as you watch the show, I hope, as you ache towards realizing it's trying to find some sort of motivation for itself, that means actually that when it turns on people and threatens them, and that ought to actually make it somewhat scarier.
Right.
Whereas I always felt that my problem at times with the, you know, watching the old show, and I love the old show, but there were certain episodes, particularly for What Bash the Dalek stories, where they were nothing really but a race of what felt like robots who would only chant the word exterminate a lot. And I just thought, the more depth you give them, the more depth you give anything, actually, the more sympathetic, because the more identifiable it becomes.
It brings the viewer.
Yeah, I mean,
the reason
why Science of the Lambs, which was actually a basis for Dalek, you know, the idea of this locked up prisoner that you identify with. The reason Hannibal Lecter is an interesting character is not that he's just this two dimensional thug. It's because you talk to him, you get inside his head, and he gets inside yours. And that's what I wanted from a Dalek. I wanted this idea that when you saw the Daleks later, and I knew that that would happen in the show. I knew that later that year we'd have them back en masse. And I knew that if the show took off, and it did, thank God, we'd have Dalek stories, you know, forever. And I would hope that a certain number of people who saw Dalek, well, if they see an army of Daleks pop up, will say, But we know that deep down they're all as dangerously complex, actually, as that one Dalek we saw in the Eccleston story. Right. So that was the idea of it.
So what do you think? Okay, the latest series 8.
Yeah.
You've been enjoying Peter Capaldi?
Hugely. Yeah.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
Now, Inside the Dalek, that particular story.
Into the Dalek.
Into the Dalek. Into the,
that's
thank
a, that's
you for,
a, no, 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 not
thank
at all.
Thank you for correcting me on
that's
my
right.
own podcast. I need that. So.
That's okay. Yeah.
But Into the Dalek. Now, what did you think of that particular story?
I thought it was really interesting. I think it gets progressively harder to find new takes on how to do Daleks. I mean, I was very lucky because I got to go first. Mm-hmm. And what I did wasn't particularly dynamic. It was having a single Dalek. And I think that what Into the Dalek does is it analyzes it in a sort of greater depth than I could have done in that introductory episode, certain aspects of what constitutes a Dalek. And I think actually just, you know, showing something we'd never actually seen before was really interesting. I loved the idea that we could, you know, be miniaturized and zapped inside the actual casing.
Yeah.
I thought it was great fun Into the Dark, yeah.
Oh, so fantastic, and I was proud too
in a funny way. And I know it wasn't probably very intentional, but the way that it played off certain things I'd done a decade earlier.
Well, it seemed very clear. I mean, the
whole "you'd make a good Dalek"
speech,
which then gets in some ways reinterpreted. I found that terribly flattering. Because it felt actually in some ways like it was trying to riff off something which had been established, and the fact that it was saying you ought to understand what this is referring to made me feel quite chuffed, because it made me feel actually like a part of established history. It was lovely.
Well, you are.
It's a strange feeling though. It's very, very strange because I remember too much writing it. I remember going through all that process 10 years ago where you just think, I hope that what we're doing now isn't going to kill the show. I hope that there will be a second season of this.
I hope that
when children watch this episode, they won't think, Daleks seem rubbish. I far prefer the Slitheen and we never see a Dalek again. So the idea now that something I did, which of course I actually remember terribly well, because it doesn't seem like 10 years ago to me, has now become something which has been, you know, it's actually four Doctors old now, the show.
It's crazy to think that,
isn't it? I find that strange.
Yeah.
The fact that we've, you know, I mean, I was on Doctor 9.
Yeah.
We're on Doctor 12 now.
Yeah,
and I find that such a wonderful tribute to the work that, say, Russell in particular put into that show.
Absolutely.
I mean, I just,
The whole
I would never have believed it, actually.
The whole Christopher Eccleston series just reestablish what Doctor Who is in the best way possible.
Thank you.
And you, in particular, you basically took an established bad guy.
Yeah.
And actually reinvented him by giving him a bit more of a 3D character, a bit more depth, like you said.
Yeah.
And it really, I think, if it wasn't for you, the Daleks wouldn't be nearly as scary as they are.
Well, I mean, thank you. I mean, believe me, it was a very, very, very much a real collaborative process. I mean, the reason why I got that commission was because Russell had heard my Big Finish Audio Jubilee, and he loved the idea of there being, you know, doing it from point of view of a single Dalek, you know, bringing them back in that sort of frame where you actually could really analyse one Dalek. Mm-hmm. But I think if I, you know, but it was certainly alongside Russell that we did that. I mean, I think if I'd gone into adapting Jubilee and just gone crazy, I was always very, very certain that the BBC Wales, the production office, wanted something like Dalek to come out of it.
Right.
And if I hadn't written it, to be honest, I think Russell would have done. So
gotcha.
So I was in a very, very privileged position. I think I was being allowed to be part of what feels now to me like a very, very historical moment. You know, I mean, the fact that I was in the room for that very, very first read-through of Doctor Who, the new series.
Right.
I mean, you know, you couldn't pay for that moment. I mean, you know, if someone said to you, you know, it'd be like someone saying to me now, do you want to go back to that very, very first meeting where they met up to rehearse An Unearthly Child in 1963? No. And I'd say, well, yeah, you know. So I mean, I think that everybody in that room at the time, I mean, I was there with Mark Gatiss, Stephen Moffat, Paul Cornell, all the writers were there. And we all met up beforehand and we had a coffee. And we all knew what we were at the beginning, hopefully, of something which ought to be Doctor Who history. So, and it was wonderful fun to be part of.
So you were a big fan from
massive. Right.
Who
was
your first Doctor?
I mean, the first one I remember seeing really was Tom Baker.
Right.
But I didn't become a proper fan until Peter Davison.
Oh, really?
I was a bit scared of Tom Baker. Uh-huh. And I still am. I'm a very, very nervous viewer of horror.
Uh-huh.
And of course, Doctor Who wasn't horror, but it felt like that to me when I was 10 years old.
Right.
So it wasn't until they took away that time tunnel opening title sequence with Tom Baker's stern face.
Yeah.
And it was actually when it was the Starfield. Oh. I found the Starfield a bit less scary. And the BBC repeated in 1981, they did a repeat series of all Doctor Who stories.
Uh-huh.
And realising that there was actually a history for Doctor Who, and that Tom was not even the first Doctor, was really interesting for me. And so I got on board, effectively, for Cash Travalva, the first Peter Davison story. So Peter Davison was really my Doctor.
Right,
and I think
for
those 3 years that he was the Doctor, that was the time of my greatest obsession with the programme.
So Rob, why don't you tell us a little bit about your newest book here that you have?
Yeah, I have a book published called They Do the Same Things Different There. I spent the last few years writing a bunch of very, very weird short stories. I mean, and they're very odd. I mean, they're stories about what happens when you wake up and find that small nations have just disappeared overnight, and what happens when you realise that, you know, that your wife's starting to give birth to furniture. I mean, very, very peculiar, slightly horrific, mostly funny stories. And this is they won things like the World Fantasy Award, and they won Shirley Jackson Awards and things. And this is the latest collection of them. It's published by a company called Cheezine in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And they promote it. I mean, look at the cover, saying this is the best weird fantasy of. So some of these are reprints. Some of these are actually newer stories.
So nice collection of short stories.
Yeah, and they're all a bit weird.
Uh-huh. So you like writing shorter stories than you know, longer things, or what do you think?
I'm doing some novels soon because those stories are novel ideas. But it's quite fun to run with something which you just think, you know what? I think that last 6,000 words. Yeah. I think that's as crazy as it gets. So let's just do that.
Cool. Yeah.
But I went to a lot of conventions when I was a teenager.
Right.
Very, you know, terribly shy. I didn't know many people. I had a bit of a stammer at the time. I was very, very nervous.
Uh-huh.
And it's the oddest thing to realise that I think that 13, 14 year old version of myself, mm-hmm. I don't know what he'd make of the fact that I've now written for the show. I think he would have hated it, actually. I think he would have, you know, I was in 84, I was 14 years old, and mm-hmm. in 2004 when I was writing Dalek, I think that 20 year gap, I think he'd looked at what I was doing and said, I don't like any of that. I really think he would have hated what I was doing, and I think he would probably hate everything now because he had no sense of humour, my 14-year-old self.
14-year-old.
In fact, if I could go back in time and meet him, I'd beat him up. I would. I didn't like him at all. I thought he was awful. I remember him watching Warriors of the Deep, and uh-huh. oh, he moaned and moaned, and I think, oh, get over it. Okay, so they can't do the murker. Doesn't mean that you have to be quite so rude about the show. Oh, Rob Sherman, the 14-year-old, was an absolute git.
A Whovian. A true Whovian.
Yeah. Well, of course, except we didn't call them Whovians back then. I mean, I think in America you were called Whovians.
Oh, okay.
We were just Doctor Who fans. Oh. And even now, call me a Whovian and I get very angry.
Oh, no.
I mean, I'm liable to just break out in a rage.
Oh,
it's strange.
God.
So, no, it's odd. I think I would have been overwhelmed at the thought I would have one day worked on the series.
Right.
But I probably wouldn't have liked what I was doing.
Oh, my God.
Because actually, I took it so seriously. Mm-hmm. I became a comedy writer. Mm-hmm. But I didn't think Doctor Who should ever be funny.
Oh, really?
And I now think Doctor Who should always be a bit funny.
Oh,
wow. I think Doctor Who is intrinsically...
Oh, yeah.
A very, very wonderfully imaginative, bonkers series. And I think if it doesn't embrace that, uh-huh. it's actually missing out on something which is vital to it.
Cool. Well, Rob, thank you so much for being on the Happiness Patrol.
You're extremely welcome. Thank you very much.
Very happy.
Chaz.
Yes.
Chaz. Now, you're at Hurricane Who. Did you watch this last night with a group of people or what?
No, we retreated back to our room to watch it because we knew that we were going to have to watch it attentively
right.
So that we could comment on it. Uh-huh. Watching it in a group is, as you've mentioned several times, it's a wonderful social experience, but details get lost.
Uh-huh.
Ooh, yeah. Do details get lost? Holy cow.
So did you only see it once?
Yeah, I've only seen it the once.
Ah, cool. So, first of all, tell me what you thought about Missy being the master. Your stupid. What was your stupid fan theory about it?
I have had several.
What was the stupidest?
including one that may actually end up being right in the end. Although I had heard obviously that Missy might be the master because mistress, etc. I thought, oh, that's too obvious. He'll go somewhere else, but
right,
he didn't.
Right.
And so there you go. I'm okay with it. He has now firmly established that Time Lords can regenerate into women, which is setting us up for some future event, perhaps,
mm-hmm.
Or at least maybe some future producer's option to cast a woman in the lead role,
and vice versa. Romana coming back as a man. What the hell?
But what's really great is that we can now get all of that. Oh. What, can I touch you there? You know, sort of. as I said earlier today, Christopher Eccleston got kissed. David Tennant got kissed a lot. Snogged, you might say.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Matt Smith got kissed. But Peter Capaldi just went to second base there. So that's pretty new for the show. And in the creepiest way possible. I'm fine with that, especially because it's an actress of Michelle Gomez's ability. She's got that ability to walk the camp line without falling over it. And she also has a huge fan in Terry Malloy. I thought you'd like to know, Nancy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's like, oh, you know about Michelle Gomez? Have you seen Green Wing? He's, you know, he's very big on her.
I'll have to share the Green Wing with you people.
Yeah. So,
it's amazing.
So anyway, I was fine with the master. I love the episode overall. I was actually surprised that they used St. Paul's again. It's like, come on, they can hide out in a different place just this once. But it was very nice, and I enjoyed the way the episode was going. We haven't got the whole story yet. So it's, I'm being a little reserved in my comments because we have another half of this story. And so there isn't too much to say, but I the Nether Sphere turned out to be pretty much what I expected it to be. Having the Cybermen in it, again, I'd seen that picture, so I sort of, in the back of my mind, knew that they were going to be there. The redesign looks really good. Mm-hmm. I like yet another redesign for the Cybermen, and yet again an improvement.
I think it's a nice throwback sort of thing.
You know? Well, it looks like we're going to firmly banish the Cybermen into that alternate universe, which is perfectly okay. I liked the Cybermen, but I'm very comfortable with them just being part of Rose's universe and not this one. I thought they gave away too much. You know, as I mentioned, as soon as you saw those enormous numbers of tombs, what else could it be? What Doctor Who villain tends to hang out in tombs a lot?
Right.
So I sort of knew where they were going with it, and I'm actually more intrigued to find out who Sebastian is. Is he an actual companion for the Master? Is Clara a companion of the Master? We'll talk more about that in a bit. So there's more places for this to go, but as a story, I thought it was reasonably exciting. I really, even though I knew it was a red herring from the get-go, I really liked the whole key scene, not only for its touchstone to the Lord of the Rings, but also because this is Clara going into new territory for her, and she really, I thought Jenna Coleman really pulled that off nicely. She can be a complete psycho bitch, apparently. and now we know how. And I was impressed with how Capaldi handled her. It was that really surprised me. When he said go to hell, I thought, okay, this is the big point here, right early on in the show, she's leaving. And then, nope, pulled you back. Nah. So I don't mind getting gotten like that once in a while. It's good. I did really like the way that the Master, the Mistress, as we're going to have to get used to saying.
Yes.
I like the way the Mistress finally had to actually say it and berated Capaldi for not keeping up.
Right. That was very Master-like.
That's funny.
Yes. Yeah. So good performances and a great setup for the second half.
Right. Well, I can't wait for the second half. Actually, I'm really hoping that the second half pulls it all together for me. I mean, there is a lot riding on that next week's 45 minutes of Doctor Who to pull together this entire story arc for me. Okay?
Yeah.
There's a lot riding on it. And I think it can be done. Unfortunately, we're just going to have to wait and see. Anyway, go ahead. Final thoughts on this episode. Michelle, what do you think?
Final thought is that I liked it, and I'm looking forward to the next one, even though, you know, I did have a bit of a reaction. I'm pleased and hopeful. The other thing I want to point out is that I love how the Mistress is basically dressed like Mary Poppins.
Yes.
She is wearing a full-on Mary Poppins costume. And I cannot wait to find out the story behind that shit.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's just, I think she, you know, like the Master always kind of mimics the Doctor in costume. You know, when the Doctor is, he's wearing a long frock coat, and so is she.
Yeah.
You know,
but she's got the hat and the boots, and it's like the Eighth Doctor reached into a locker and pulled out a Wild Bill Hickok costume. Like, I don't know where the Master was, but she ended up with a Mary Poppins costume, and
I think it's awesome.
An evil Mary Poppins. That's great.
Kind of a steampunky Mary Poppins.
Yeah, I enjoyed it, but just I'm sorry. I just, as a cosplayer, I gotta say the whole Mary Poppins look is great, especially if you are familiar with the books, because she Mary Poppins could totally be a Time Lord.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. People have said that.
So,
read the book.
Super dark, those books. Love them.
So,
check them out.
So, Chaz, your final thoughts on this?
Well, I have been saying this all season long, so I might as well say it again. If you haven't already, this is a beautiful opportunity to go back and check out select stories from the past that this ties into. In particular, you really need to look at the Tomb of the Cybermen.
Yes.
You really need to look at Earthshock. You really need to look at the invasion, especially the invasion.
Yeah.
This is there's also, of course, this is the revelation of the Daleks. You know, this is deals with the death and the afterlife and organ donations and cremations and so on. And it just goes on like that. But there is one point that I'm a little confused about. Maybe one of you guys can explain it to me. Missy says very briefly, by way of explanation of why she's even there, that it's a callback to the end of time where she says, "The one you abandoned, didn't you ever think I'd find my way back?" Mm-hmm. And my memory of the end of time may be blurry, but it seems to me like the Doctor didn't abandon the Master in that one. He walked away. The Master walked away, right? He was busy beating up on Rassilon. So
yeah,
yeah. Well,
It wasn't a case of abandonment. He was taken back with the Time Lords when they got taken back away.
Well, the whole thing about the Master anyway is that whole brother relationship, the whole sibling relationship with the Master and the Doctor. It's never been firmly established that they are brothers or siblings in that fact, but it does play off like the Doctor was the favorite child and the Master has been the jealous sibling. So no matter what happens, actually the viewpoint of the Master is always a negative one of abandonment, of like rejection, that kind of thing. Yeah. Not being good enough.
Even though at the end when he was beaten up on Rassilon, it seemed like the Master was like, "No, it's cool. I'm gonna get sucked into this vortex, and that's and you should be okay with that."
Yeah.
Any amount of time, like struggling or suffering, can change one's perspective.
Yeah.
On something.
Maybe that's it. Also, I have to say that props to Stephen Moffat for managing to work in a visual reference, not an actual callback, but a visual reference to Curse of Fatal Death and Missy's etheric beam locators.
Oh, God.
Yes, Jesus. They're Dalek bumps.
Yes, moving right along. So, Nancy, you had a point to make.
Well, not really a point. I do have to say that I am looking forward to next week, and I hope it doesn't suck. I did enjoy this episode. I had a couple other little minor points I wanted to mention. Sheila Reid, who plays Clara's gran, had been in Vengeance on Veros.
So that's right.
Yet another.
I knew I recognized.
Oh my God!
Of
yes.
An actor. Yes.
I knew she looked familiar.
Yes.
And the other point I was going to make was when the Doctor flashes the psychic paper and he says it's a government inspection, and the guy says, "Oh my! All the swearing. Isn't that kind of a callback to the thick of it?
The thick of it. Yes.
Yes.
It's got to be.
Yes.
I thought there were lots of lovely little touches in this, and I was perfectly happy with it. And please, Moffat, don't make it suck.
Yeah. Well, my final comment is I'm looking forward to next week for sure to see if we can pull this fat out of the fire, so to speak. And also, the only other observation that I had is like, didn't we see both the Doctor and Clara open up the TARDIS quite easily just by snapping their fingers?
Yes.
They were inside.
No, they did it from the outside, too.
Yeah.
Oh, they've done it from the outside. So yes, that was a problem.
Yeah.
But they were holding keys.
But it still,
they had keys.
But it was still a dream.
Here's the thing. It did not make that scene for me any less important and dramatic, because that was some amazing acting on both of those actors' parts. It was just really, really good. So, yeah, it says a lot about the relationship the point, the thing about the relationship, and it really has just been about relationships in this entire series. The Clara's relationship with the Doctor, Clara's relationship with Danny. Not that you know, one was better than the other, or they were competing with each other, and necessarily so, but just the fact that you could see how she was dealing with having a double life. And quite honestly, you know, after she pulls this key thing with the Doctor, and they're back in the TARDIS, and he's like, you know, saying, we're going to go find Danny, that sort of thing. And she's like, I can't believe you do that. What was the line, Chaz, that the Doctor said to Clara?
She says, then why are you helping me? And he says, why? Do you think I care for you so little that betraying me would make a difference?
Yeah, that was nice. Yeah.
That was
That line there, basically, you know exactly where the Doctor stands with Clara, you know, which is exactly where we all want the Doctor to stand with his companions and with us. So thanks, everybody, for hanging out once again with the Happiness Patrol. We're going to just stand by for next week for the second part of the season finale. So, yeah. So if you guys are going to be up in Elihu next weekend, like us, we are going to be there. Please come up and say hi. We love meeting fans and listeners of the Happiness Patrol. And we can't wait to see the whole gang up there. Ken Deep and Billy Davis and Andre. Tessia. It'll be great seeing our old podcast mate doing his thing in Elihu. That'll be a lot of fun. And hopefully we'll see you there too. Until then, if you guys want to listen to some more Happiness Patrol, you can always find us on our Blogspot. You can always find us on at the Apple iTunes store. You can go there and leave us a little review. That'd be great. And our Blogspot, Michelle, the Blogspot, please.
That's the happinesspatrol.blogspot.com.
And you can always email us your comments at the.happiness.patrol@gmail.com. So that's cool. And follow us on Twitter. We're the H Patrol on Twitter, so you can follow us. And and of course, we're all over the Book of Faith, where you can see and listen to our mini episodes. We like to call them the Patrollers, and basically it's just short commentary from fans of the Happiness Patrol and some of our Happiness Patrol reporters from all over the globe, talking about the latest episode of Doctor Who. I'm a little behind on that right now. I do apologize, but don't worry. It'll be caught up very shortly. So, gang, what a delightful time. We're reaching the end of Season 8, and wow, what a ride. What a ride it has been. Now that we know that we've got the Master and some Cybermen to deal with, it should be a pretty tense week trying to figure out what the hell is going to happen to Missy and Clara and the Doctor and Danny Pink. So,
there's a lot more pink of him
calm
now.
Calm down.
I'm Count Floyd.
What was that?
I'm like Count Floyd now. Count Floyd, yes. Monster, killer monster horror.
It's going to be scary.
It's Dr. Tongue's 3D House of Cybermen.
Ooh. Yeah, 3D House of Cybermen, yeah. So anyway, until next time, I am Lewis B.
I'm Nancy A.
I'm Michelle H.
And I'm Chaz M. And after this episode, I do want you to cremate me. Definitely cremate me.
See you later. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Happiness Patrol.
We are Gemini. Oh my God, Lewis, that was awesome.
No. Have you seen John Pinto over at the...
Have I seen John Pinto? I practically had sex with him.
Thank you.
So you have name PTSD.
I've called her I've called her everything from Albert to Hermark to Herbert. Michelle Herbert, please.
So, I don't know what the Happiness Patrol is all about.
Yeah, really.
Be careful about
Absolutely
that.
Absolutely horrible.
And cats. They're insidious creatures.
We'll edit point. We'll look it up and not sound so stupid.
I went to 3 parties and consumed a lot of absinthe.
That stuff will get you going. That's the sort of stuff that made Van Gogh cut off his ear, right? I'm so sorry. I pulled a thing out of my out of my ass. Thank you guys.
Don't
I love
go
the way
pulling
you,
things out you of go, your thing.
Don't go breaking
That's
my heart.
Dangerous.
Cybermen, like they're it's like a Jewish family. Ah, Dr. Cyberman, come in.
Yeah, wow.
Shut up, you guys.